views and opinions expressed on the following podcast are those of the persons appearing on the program and not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. What do you know? It's time for a brand new edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. I'm your cordial and ADHD host, Russ LeBlanc, saying welcome, welcome. Did I say welcome? Yep, I did. I think I did. I'll throw in another welcome just in case. Ah, the shticks, huh? I hope you're feeling well. If the answer is, I could be better. Cheer up. Things will get better. We will help you as best we can. Club ADHD, the podcast, is part of a three-prong approach. We have Club ADHD, the podcast, and Club ADHD, the Twitter account, and the Facebook page. That's what Club ADHD is all about. It's by adults with ADHD, for adults with ADHD. If we band together, we'll get through this thing, right? Whatever this thing is. This ADHD thing. Yeah, that's what I mean. And I want to thank the folks at CADAC, that's the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, for helping us out here by presenting Club ADHD. I can't say this enough. If you want to get some information on ADHD or how you can wave the awareness flag or maybe a template when it comes to writing a physician or a politician to garner some support from them, the CADAC website is the place to go. Doesn't matter if you're in Canada or not. Yes, it's aimed at people in Canada, but the information is so generic that you can use it just about anywhere. Here's the address, the web address. CADDAC.ca, CADAC.ca. And I say it's important that you can use it no matter where you are in the world because we have worldwide listeners. Round of applause to them. Not only here in Canada and in the U.S., got them all over the place. The U.K., I think we had a few in Russia, I believe. I know we have some in China, in Australia, all over the place. It's always good to know that we are reaching out to people who need us. And I guess it's good to know in a sense. I say I guess because wouldn't it be nice if there was a place on this earth that didn't have ADHD? People did not have ADHD. There's no risk of them ever having it. There isn't such a place. ADHD does not discriminate. Now, some places might ignore it, but it's still there. And if you happen to be in one of those places that are ignoring it, keep listening. We'll do our best to help you, to inform you, and maybe you can relate to some of the things that we're saying and some of the interviews that we're doing, because that's what it's all about. Us helping you, you helping us, or helping me, I should say. And, we can do it together. ADHD isn't going anywhere. Now, these days, it's not a great weather time here in the Toronto area, here in the northeast region of North America, because we're heading into winter, unless you like winter. I'm not a big fan, but hey, this is November. It shouldn't be winter now. We shouldn't have a blizzard now. We shouldn't have Arctic-like temperatures, but we do. This is a little strange, folks, and disturbing, because in November, we're not supposed to be shoveling snow and worrying about that. That's just going to elongate a winter that hasn't even started yet, as far as the calendar goes. And it can be somewhat depressing, because with all this weather comes gray skies, and the sun isn't out as much. And I know, by way of our Facebook page, that there are quite a few people, myself included, that, get a little bit gloomy when the weather is gloomy. Now, I've got one of those, what do we call, happy lights in my office here. I guess it's okay. I had it for about a year before I even, started using it. I only started using it a few days ago. At first, it was distracting. You have to position it at a certain angle. But then it was a bit better. And I was using it because other people who've been on the Facebook page said that they use it and it helps. So I'm just trying to see if it helps me. And maybe you can post something on the Facebook page to let us know how it's working for you if you happen to have one. And you might inspire other people to go out and get one. I'm still in the trying out phase. That's what I'm doing. Now, when it comes to this type of weather, I look at it, there's parallels with ADHD. Okay, what do I mean by that? Well, I'll tell you. It's November, snow's on the ground. We had a couple of blizzards or a couple of days of a blizzard. Shoveling, it's ice cold. What can I do about it? What can you do about it? Nothing. You don't control Mother Nature. She will not be controlled. As much as we don't like it, as much as we can wish it to go away, that isn't going to happen. It's going to do what it's going to do. I'm talking weather. Kind of like ADHD in us. If we have ADHD, no matter how we don't like it, it's not going anywhere. We have to deal with it. And that's the same with the weather. We have to deal with it. We have to drive safer. We have to figure out a plan as far as going to work, maybe clearing out the driveway. ADHD is similar. We might not like it. Some people actually do like it, but a lot of people consider it to be an unwelcome challenge. And if you're one of those people, there's nothing you can do about it. So what can we do about it? I just said nothing. But we can approach it a certain way to make it a bit easier. Now, when it comes to the weather, okay, maybe some people will look at it and say, oh, yeah, I don't like it, but I kind of like to go sledding or skiing or whatever. That's good. When it comes to ADHD, we can look at the positives, and there are a lot of positives out there. And we just have to find them. And maybe together we can work on that and work on how to work around it. We can't go through it. We can go over it, maybe around it. Just devise a plan to just accept it and then get on with it. And that's like the weather. So I found a parallel there. If anything, it gave me something to talk about at the beginning of the podcast. And that's what I just did. Now, we've got a full podcast lined up for you. Of course, we have our special feature lined up for you called TNT, Tips and Tricks. And as a matter of fact, we'll go to that right now. And before I do, you might notice a little bit of a difference in microphones throughout the podcast. I'm playing around with a few, and some interviews or some of my microphone items or speech might sound a little different. That's why. Just in a beta phase. So bear with us. And now, let's go to TNT. And now it's time for Club ADHD's TNT. Otherwise known as Tips and Tricks, with our resident Club ADHD coach, Jason Froats.
Hey, Russ. Yep. Have you ever had this situation happen where you've been trying to get something done? You might have got a bunch of stuff done in a day. But they're all the things that you like to do. But there's those nagging things that you've consciously or maybe unconsciously avoiding.
Jason,
has that ever happened to you?
Jason, there's a reason why I don't have the camera activated on our little connection here, because my desk is a mess. So, yes.
There you go. That's a prime example. Absolutely. And so what is it about your desk that you don't like to do, like to clean? Why don't you want to clean it?
Sometimes it gets overwhelming. I mean, I'll admit, my intentions are good, but I get into it, and then it's like, it just the whole process overwhelms me.
Fair enough. You know, and that happens to me too, Russ, like in different things that I don't really like to do. And often I find myself doing things that I like to do. And of course, all those things that I like to do get kind of pushed to the end, to the end of the day. And then I have that excuse that, oh, you know what? I don't have enough time anymore to do those things. So it's very convenient, isn't it, the way our brains work? So, you know, this is a tip that could apply to anybody. If you're a student, you know, in high school, university, or even an adult, you know, at work, this is a tip to help you deal with those things that you don't like to do. So I'd like you to think of something that you just don't like doing, that you hate to do, and then maybe see if this might work for you. Okay. Again, it doesn't work for everybody, but it might work for you. Hopefully it'll make it easier. So I was working with a young student recently, and he wants to get his homework done on all his subjects, not just the ones he likes. So he likes history, doesn't like math so much, but he gets homework in math every day. So he asked me, you know, coach, how do I consistently get the math stuff done? And so my suggestion was, you need three things. There's three elements to getting something done that you don't like to do. And one is that we need to have a light at the end of the tunnel. We have to see that, okay, at the end of this, you know, little work period, there's an end to it. It's not going to go on forever, mm-hmm. right? So having that, you know, being able to see the end of it, and that's usually by way of setting a time limit on something. So that would be the first thing, was set a goal. So it doesn't have to be a time limit, but it could be a specific, you know, accomplishment. The second element is to create some scaffolding around it so we don't get distracted and get lost and get off track. And so one thing I like to use is a timer. And so I have a physical timer, a big green light on the top of it that goes red when that 30 minutes, for example, is done. Or I have something on my computer that actually times what I'm doing. So that scaffolding, at least if it's visual and it's in front of you, then you're seeing the time tick down and you can see how much time you've got left to get something done. So again, a timer would be, or putting scaffolding around what you're doing would be the second tip, or second ingredient, I should say. And then the third thing is make it more attractive somehow. Now it might be, pardon the expression, like putting lipstick on a pig, okay? We know that we don't like it. No matter how much we want to dress it up, it's still going to be math, let's say. But bringing some elements in of things that you like to do, or making the experience a little bit easier, might make things easier. So my suggestion would be to put on your favorite music, for example. Now, it could be some of us like music, or can work and not get distracted with music that has no lyrics to it. Some, the lyrics are okay. So it just depends on you. So this is a bit of a customized thing. Music, or having something that you like with you. So it could be a cup of coffee, your favorite cup of Java, or hot chocolate, or matcha, whatever it is. Make the environment that you're doing the task in more fun, more enjoyable to you. So those are the three things. One is have an end. So have a light at the end of the tunnel. So at the end of this, that's it. I'm done my work. Second is put some scaffolding around it. Put a timer, or put a goal that, you know, so you know when you're done, and that needs to be really clear. And third is make it more enjoyable while you're doing the task. And those would be the three ingredients, I think, to tackling something that's difficult to do.
Jason, I just visualized something. I'm doing my taxes with a timer right next to me as I soak my feet. How's that?
Sounds good. Like in a hot tub or something?
Whatever. I wonder, that's just me.
Yeah. I wish I had a hot tub. I could try that. I don't think my wife probably appreciate it, because she's an accountant, and you know, just getting wet. I'm submit those. She might not like.
But here you go, honey. A little damp, but they're there. Well, Jason, thank you for those tips, or for that tip, that three-layer tip. I'm sure somebody, including myself, will benefit from it. As I look at my desk, I'm gonna go get a bucket of water and soak my feet. It's now time to hop in the Club ADHD yacht. Hey, if you're going to fantasize, you might as well fantasize big, right? As we sail down the mighty Mississippi River, and we're going to stop off at St. Louis, Missouri. That's the hometown for our guest for the interview portion of this podcast, Club ADHD, the podcast, I might add. Now, this person, he's known about his ADHD for some time, and he was living a life with ADHD, not thinking much about it. And he has some pretty interesting stories, and we'll be getting to those stories too, including one that involves water balloons and physical threats. What's that about? Well, listen and find out. Now, also, we're going to be talking about a change in his life, a change that inspired him to learn more about his ADHD. And ironically, that change, the first part of that change, came about as a result of a video created by the people who support Club ADHD, the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, otherwise known as CADAC. They had a function featuring a well-known ADHD expert, and they videoed his talk, put it online, and our guest saw it, and it inspired him to find out more about ADHD, and that's what he did. And in doing so, his life changed. Does this sound familiar? Kind of along the same lines as our previous guest. The similarities are there as far as the desire to learn more about ADHD. Now, getting back to today's guest, that's what he did. He started to learn more about ADHD, and in doing so, his life changed. Because with knowledge comes power, and when it comes to ADHD, the power of knowing about it, especially if you have it, will help you adapt to it, or work around it, or deal with it, or however you want to call it. He'll tell us what that was like. His name is Shannon Russell. And we start our conversation with Shannon telling us about the diagnosis, his diagnosis when it comes to ADHD.
I was diagnosed at 18, which would have been in 1997. It was after I graduated from high school. I was still looking at colleges and hadn't decided. And my mom had been, I don't know if she had read Driven to Distraction yet, but okay. She had started learning about ADHD and recognized a lot of the symptoms in me. And so she was concerned that I was planning to go to college, and she thought that it might help if I had some accommodations. So that was her primary interest in getting me to a neurologist. And he immediately said I had ADD. This was, you know, back then when it was two different diagnoses. As I'm just now learning that actually by that point, 1997, it already was just one diagnosis with three subtypes. Mm-hmm. Apparently the neurologist I was working with hadn't caught up to that. So I was diagnosed as ADD.
So leading up to that, I mean, your mother said, hey, there's something wrong here. Shannon's not quite doing well or whatever. What were you thinking? Did you feel different than somebody else? Did you realize that maybe there's something going on in my head that shouldn't be going on?
Well, you know, I didn't really think of myself as different. I did realize that I got in trouble more than other people.
Okay.
Seemed to have more conflicts with authority than other people. I knew that other people had an easier time making friends and keeping friends, mm-hmm. and just with relationships in general. So I didn't think that I was different so much as I just had a bunch of more flaws that made me more difficult to deal with. But yeah, no, I didn't really think of myself as different. I guess I did. I knew that I behaved differently, but I didn't think it was anything, you know, innate to me. I thought it was just, you know, I'm just a little more obnoxious than most people.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the funny thing is that, you know, how do you define normal? I mean, if you're living a life a certain way, that's normal to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just assumed that, I assume that most people had the same kind of mind that I did. Like the way that I thought about things was the way other people think of things, which is very chaotic and very, there's a lot of things going on. The thing I started writing was called Three Track Mind because I felt like I had three trains of thought running at one time. And it wasn't three different voices. It was all the same voice. It was just moving so quickly that it was almost like three ideas could be held at the same time and compete with each other for attention.
It's a lot of juggling.
It is, but I got used to it and I got acclimated to it. And it was only when I took Ritalin for a month about a year ago that it was so bizarre because it was like, is this how other people think? Is this how most neurotypical people? Now, it's just slower and less coming at you.
What did you think about your mother saying that, well, I want you to meet with this person to figure out what's going on? Were you saying, hey, what do you mean what's going on? I'm normal. Or how did you react?
No, because I knew that I had, throughout grade school, I spent a lot of time in the principal's office. I went to two different schools because I had to switch. When I was going into seventh grade, I switched schools because a teacher threatened me.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Are we talking about a teacher threatening you physically to harm you?
Yeah, kind of. It was vague enough that you wouldn't get the police involved. But yeah. My mom was a youth minister, and so I was in sixth grade, and it was for seventh and eighth grade. So I'd usually hang out with them, you know, go to the youth group events, but I wasn't really officially part of it.
Right.
And at this one event, they were doing a balloon toss back and forth with a water balloon, and I had my own water balloon. And I didn't have anybody to throw it back and forth with, so I felt kind of left out. And I see this, it was a student teacher, and I'll call him Dan.
All right.
And Dan is walking up to the gym with a woman, a young woman about his age, and they're both wearing like all white outfits, white like polo shirt, white shorts. And I'm standing up on the top of the steps of a gym, and they're walking toward the entrance. They're coming to the steps to go into the gyms. So something's like volleyball is what it turned out to be. And as he got close, I yelled, "Hey, Mr. Smith." And I threw the water balloon at him.
Yeah.
And it hit the curb and somehow mixed with the dirt on the curb and turned into mud like instantly and splattered him and his date across their white outfits. And so come Monday morning, he pulled me aside into a classroom by myself and like had me sit in the desk and got right up in my face and said, "If you ever humiliate another person like that again, I will personally come and destroy you myself." I mean, just like laid into me and screamed at me. Yeah.
Not so exactly a Tide commercial.
No, this could have been, that could have been turned into a positive, but no, he was furious. He was a young guy. He was probably right in college and, you know, trying to impress a girl or something. I don't know. So I told my mom and she freaked out and told the principal, and the principal, he had me in his office like every day pretty much. So he knew that whatever this teacher said was valid. And it was. I mean, I didn't really give much thought to this grown up probably doesn't want a water balloon thrown at
him. Yeah.
So then I switched schools and there it wasn't any better. The teachers were even worse, if anything, because it was a much smaller school. Everyone there was like close knit and tightly knew each other since you know, first grade. And here I was, this outcast with, you know, nobody knew about ADD. So I was just this hyperactive kid ruining everything for their last 2 years. So yeah, that's my experience with educators. And so none of this came as a surprise when my mom was like, "Hey, there's this thing called ADD. You might have it. Do you want to check it out?" And I just thought, sure. I mean, you know, I just wanted to understand why I was always, you know, in the principal's office.
Right. You're popular, but for the wrong reason.
Oh, I wasn't popular. Yeah, I wasn't popular. I wouldn't even call that popular. I was distinct, I guess, would be the only thing I would call it.
So here you are, you're going to get tested and you're going through the ropes as far as what's need to be done. And all of a sudden, the conclusion, hey, you've got ADHD. How did you feel? Did you feel anything? Did you know what it was about?
Well, it felt reassuring that there was a name for it, that I wasn't, you know, if there was a name for it, that means there was more people than just me.
Okay.
And so it wasn't just me that's having trouble, you know, going to school, having friends, you know, all that stuff. There's got to be other people out there too. But I didn't go much beyond that. Like, I kind of learned the very superficial information about ADD. And that was that, okay, one side is it makes it so that you have a short attention span, easily distracted. But on the other hand, you're creative and you have a great imagination. And those were basically, in my mind, the two sides of ADD and life. I just handled after that, knowing that, like, okay, I've got these two things that is a trade-off. And that was pretty much it until like recently. Like, that was just, you know, I have ADD and that's it.
Well, I read your blog and you mentioned a video that was taken at a CADAC conference, which CADAC supports us here, the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, and it featured Russell Barkley, or Dr. Russell Barkley. And that was a turning point for you.
Mm-hmm.
How so?
Yeah. Well, because I had been told ADD was a gift. Like, my entire life, I just thought of it as, it's a gift, but the drawback is you have a short attention span. And that was it. So it didn't seem that bad. Like, I was like, all right, well, you know, the short attention span just means I have to find other stuff to occupy me and I don't have any trouble doing that. I'm always willing to entertain myself. But watching the video of Dr. Barkley explaining executive dysfunction, what it like opened a whole series of doors onto what I've experienced in life. And it basically, I mean, it's nothing different from what I've already explained that I had trouble with in school. It just expanded my understanding of how that's an actual mental disability rather than just me being, you know, inept or unsociable. Or it just expanded my understanding of how ADHD impacted me which I wish I had understood sooner. I wish I had understood it. You know, like I said, I wasn't diagnosed until 18. I wish I had known in grade school when that executive dysfunction was a thing, and that getting myself motivated to do things is just harder in me. And it's not just because I'm, you know, morally at fault or deficient in some way. It's an actual blockage in the brain. It's an actual, you know, severing of neurons that should be connected. So, I mean, what do you do with it now? Now that I'm at the, you know, pretty much the midpoint of my life, I can use it at work. I can use it. I can, you know, understand executive functions and how they should be working and how they don't work in me, and recognize, you know, how I can improve things in my life now, not just at work, but, you know, my relationships, being a father. These are all areas that executive function touches on. But now I can kind of conceptualize it better. I can see how it all interacts and relates. And it's incredibly reassuring. It's incredibly reassuring that, okay, yeah, you've got these deficits, but there are ways to overcome it. There are, you know, coping mechanisms that you can put in place that make things a little bit easier. It makes me a little less afraid of medication. I resisted years doing any kind of stimulant because I was worried about how it would impact my brain and especially my creativity, which I'm just very protective of.
Right.
So it makes me kind of reassess, you know, who I am, what makes me me, and how I can better live my life.
Now, I'm thinking back of when you were describing before you saw the video, it was more or less, unless you're just summarizing it real quick, the fact that you have it, I'm dealing with it. Now let's get on with life. That's the way the picture, the way that you told it. But now that you found out more information about it, do you find that you're bogged down in it?
So yeah, I think, I mean, if I'm reading you correct, you're asking if, you know, having the diagnosis, the full depth of the diagnosis, did it make it more like that it's more all encompassing?
Well, yeah. The picture that you painted was, hey, I've got ADHD. Okay, here I go. But now you're finding out more information. You're getting proper information. And sometimes we can get caught up in that this is the way I'm supposed to act. And yeah, I'm understanding it. But and you get so caught up in all of the facts as opposed to just being a bit carefree.
I would say that the carefree part of it, I mean, that's kind of my nature. I'm an optimist by nature, and I don't see any... I consider myself an optimistic pragmatist. Like I think things are generally good in life and things go well. But what I didn't realize was that because I had limited my understanding of ADD to imagination versus attention span. Like right. that was the only thing I really knew. It meant that all these other negative things I was experiencing, I didn't really attribute to ADD.
Oh, you just thought it was you. So would you define yourself... Yeah. Back then, if you're looking back now, I'm just going to ask you this question, Janet. Would you define yourself as a jerk back then?
Boy, that's a hard question. It's a good question, though.
Yeah, we don't want to admit that, but hey, I'll admit it. I've been a jerk.
Yeah.
But sometimes, yeah, you know, we're living normal lives, we think, but we think that it's everyone else. Then we discover that it's us. And then that's when we start thinking back. And that's the way I look at it. And by the sounds of it, just, you know, you not really delving, there is a kind of a jerk level there. You could have been. Let me get my jerk meter here. Okay, Shannon. Yeah, it's getting up there, Shannon, but it's looking better now.
Yeah, actually, you're kind of nailing it on the head. Like, I think I was a jerk, but oblivious to it. A great example is interrupting people. It's something that is a jerk move. So did I do it? Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Just constantly. Like, I love finishing people's sentences, and I love when I can finish someone's sentence accurately.
Right.
Like, that's – I don't just want to finish your sentence. I want to finish your thought and make sure that we're both on the same wavelength. Like, to me, that's almost like a – it's almost like a compliment. Like, I'm following you so closely, and I know you so well that I can fill in the blanks if I need to. Of course, from their perspective, I'm just talking over them. But the reality is I'm super listening to you. I've taken everything you've told me and already spun forward a couple of seconds ahead of you, and I see where you're going, and I want you to know. Dr. Halliwell's delivered from distraction and the list of questions is just amazing. Like that too. Like those two things, Russell Barkley and Dr. Mm-hmm. Halliwell, both of those were kind of like, oh crap, there's way more to this. But one of his questions was, you know, does your sense of humor offend people sometimes? that's the only sense of humor I have is offending people, like, yeah, all the time, making them laugh. But at the same time, they're like, holy crap, I can't believe he said that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's probably a big source of a lot of the relationship issues I've had in my life, where I don't realize just how grating I can be to others, and I'm just oblivious to it.
Yeah.
And that would make me a jerk.
Well, I guess that's the thing though, is sometimes when you're in that mode, you think, hey, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm doing things right. And I have to admit, back when I was, well, maybe I'm still a jerk. I got to get that jerk level there. No, yeah, I'm a bit better. Back then I used to think everybody else, well, they're the jerks. They don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And that's tough to admit.
It is. Well,
honestly, when you first do
it. It's not that hard to admit, because I had a lot of alienated relationships. So I knew that, like, objectively speaking, other people did not enjoy my company. For the way I've always thought of it is, somebody, you know, the old story of the Pepsi challenge. So, you know, the whole idea of it is that with Pepsi, it's sweeter. Coca-Cola is not as sweet. So in small batches, you know, when you take a little Dixie cup of Pepsi, it tastes better because it tastes sweeter. And your you know, Cro-Magnon mind is like, oh, that's the best.
Mm-hmm.
But people still prefer Coke. And the theory is that Coke is less cloying. It's not nearly as sweet. And I feel like I'm Pepsi. I'm the Pepsi challenge. People can take me in, you know, small doses for limited periods of time, but there are very few people who prefer Pepsi over Coke.
Right.
And those are the people that I gravitate to, the people who can tolerate me in large batches.
I just realized I'm a pepper. Sorry, I'm neither. But a boom. But it's true, though. Yeah, you can. Good things taste good in small doses, but can get pretty sickening if you keep consuming them. And yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
With our humor, sometimes, yeah, you hear comedians, and I'm convinced that the high percentage of comedians are ADHD, but yeah, you got to find that line and then cross it. But hell, we don't cross it. We just take a 4x4 and run over it and stomp on it and keep going.
Let's make some new lines.
Yeah.
That's philosophy.
So now that you've discovered this and you're doing some research, you're doing a little bit of flag waving.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like what's you know, I started the blog. Actually, I just started writing stuff privately, just trying to get, like, I need to put my life in context for myself. And then I started to think, you know, well, maybe I should start doing this, you know, as a blog. And then, you know, when to get on Twitter, because I have a different Twitter account, but it's all political and nobody reads me or. But here I was like, I'm going to try something different, separate. And just reading a lot of the experiences of other people with ADHD has put me so much more at ease. You know, it's first finding out about executive function and how much more complicated it is. But then learning, like, the struggles that I have because of executive dysfunction are fairly common among people with ADHD, things that I was not aware of. And so I'm reading all these tweets from people who are talking about, you know, let's say rejection sensitivity dysphoria. Holy crap. Like, that explains so much in my life that I didn't even think was possible. But here's all these other people who have that same deep fear of rejection, not just like, you know, I don't like being rejected, which nobody does, but where it, like, starts to make it so you don't want to put yourself out there at all. You don't want to risk feeling that pain anymore. Like, reading that other people have had that feeling, you know, it takes it out of just, this is me and my experience, and makes it, this is the experience of people with ADHD. And something about having that community now has made it so much more tolerable and so much more, like, hopeful that I can find better solutions and better ways of dealing with the symptoms of executive dysfunction.
Do you find that when you write things down in your blog, it makes things a bit easier?
Yeah. I did. I posted a tweet the other day where I just, you know, was thinking out loud, basically, about should I use Medium for my blog post, or should I use WordPress? And I'm more used to WordPress. And I was like, well, why am I telling, asking people, I don't really need anyone's feedback, but I realized that I just need to have it out there. Like, once it's on the page, it's real, it's out of my head, and it's on the paper, and I don't have to ruminate on it myself. And then I can kind of deal with it better. And that's what I'm doing right now, is I'm working through what I'm learning about ADHD in my blog so that I can better understand it for myself. And hopefully it helps other people too, because that's reading other people's experiences helped with me. So, it just seems like the more we share what we've experienced, the more other people might take solace in that. And, we'll just help each other out.
What about letting other people know about your ADHD? Are you comfortable with that? Was there a point when you weren't?
Oh, no. As soon as I learned I had ADD, I was telling everybody.
Yeah, that can happen. How did that work?
Yeah. It just felt like I have this thing that makes me a little bit different. And it helped to explain somewhat why I didn't feel like I really fit right with most people. Like, there was something, fundamental to me. I just didn't understand the full depth of it. So it's just this thing that they've discovered. But then it got weird because, in 1997 was when I think parents, like the general public, started to notice ADD and notice the medicating of kids. And it became that a big controversy where, is ADD really a thing? And that's where, I still believed it was, but there's so many people out there who are saying it's a hoax, or that, medication. The real thing that pisses me off is the idea that Ritalin is leading people to do mass shootings or other horrible conspiracy theories that aren't rooted in anything except ignorance and intolerance. But I didn't really have any problem identifying as ADD. I just felt like it almost felt like a way to summarize my personality into a very simplistic diagnosis that other people could understand.
Hey folks, this is why I am, and this is why I did this. And I feel the same way. I went through that, but I have a big but there. A few people, I know this happened when I'm saying, hey, I got ADHD, I'm blah, blah, blah. And you could almost see it in their face. Like, I knew this guy was nuts. Have you had that encounter at all, as far as people thinking that, mentally deranged? Okay.
I've never felt like ADD was really stigmatized to the level of other neurological conditions. And in fact, I kind of feel like it's been trivialized. I think that people, they basically equate ADD with normal, healthy, rambunctious behaviors, typically of boys. They don't really apply it to girls, obviously, because of, it presents differently in girls, and I guess they're more prone to the inattentive type, which isn't as disruptive, so therefore it's not as, it doesn't make teachers cringe as much. But the hyperactive boys, I mean, it's become almost synonymous with rambunctious juvenile behavior. And that's basically how I thought of it. I mean, if it, in a very simplistic way like that, until I Russell Barkley and reading about executive dysfunction, and suddenly it's like, yeah, all these limitations are things I've experienced, but never in my life did I imagine it was because of ADD.
Sure.
And I think if people understood that aspect of it more, it wouldn't be quite as trivialized.
Well, I think that, and the fact that a lot of people experience what we experience, albeit in a very limited fashion and a brief moment, they just don't get the fact that, we live it every day, as opposed to, I had an ADD moment yesterday, couldn't find the keys. Well, try living, 24/7, a little different story.
If every trip to the kitchen ended up with you standing there going, why am I doing this? Where am I going? maybe once in a while.
So where are you going now? What type of a job do you have, or do you have a job, or what career do you have, or do you want to have?
So right now I just finished my degree in communications about a year and a half ago. because when I didn't finish college at the traditional time, despite having accommodations. I got a girl pregnant and became a father at 21, and suddenly, like, you know, that takes precedence over everything, and I just basically had to claw my way up a career ladder based on, you know, a very disparate set of skills and no degree, and eventually got to where I was working for a pretty big auditing firm. I got lucky with that job and was there almost a decade, where I started to build all these skills and Microsoft Office and Adobe, you know, various creative pursuits. And I've been able to add now this degree with communications, and now I'm doing marketing.
So do they know about your ADHD? They, as in your bosses?
Yeah, I actually, this is the first job I've ever disclosed it to bosses. Because, again, in the past, I didn't think it really, you know, I didn't think it impacted me that much. But now that I know about executive dysfunction, I'm like, oh, yeah, well, that's why I have to keep much better tag on projects that are due, because I will just fly right by them without realizing it. Or I have to keep, you know, obsessive lists, or I might miss something. Or, hey, I have to tell, you know, I had to warn them, you know, you have to give it to me in writing. You have to email me so that I can flag it and it stays, you know, on paper for me, because if you just tell me about it, it's gone. It's Godspeed to that, you know, request you made. So yeah, I've had to tell them about it, and you know, they've been very accommodating and very helpful. I say accommodating, I think it's just understanding. Like, you know, there's no real outrage if I miss something. They're very, you know, very supportive.
It sounds like they know that you've got something to offer. You've got all these benefits, and they're willing to forgive, you know, the little things. And that's what we're really pushing for, that not enough employers are in that same boat. And you're very lucky to be in that position. And I want to applaud you first. Now, I do that every once in a while. People actually get off on it. The fact that you are able to bring this up and not afraid to bring it up to your employer. One, you mentioned about the fatherhood and the fact that you took ownership of that. You didn't abandon that. And it's so easy to look the other way, and it happens all the time. But the fact that you were willing to talk to the people around you about your ADHD and, you know, let the chips fall where they may, and they're falling okay.
They did. And I think I know that I'm lucky, because I hear stories from people who are just, and I've actually been in a lot of positions where I knew I would not receive, you know, understanding or empathy from a supervisor, just the nature of the job or the nature of the, you know. But before I got that great job at the auditing firm, you know, that was around when I was, you know, roughly 30. From the age of 16 to 30, I had over 30 jobs. Wow. And was fired probably from like 2/3 of them. Largely for like tardiness or missing work or being terrible at my job, or, you know, when I stop caring, you know, you care for it for a couple of weeks and then you're just
got
like
bored. Yeah.
But yeah, it's work has always been my biggest struggle, especially since I didn't have a degree and I knew I had a lot of skills to offer, but, you know, most employment is not, they don't care about really the skills so much as, okay, you've got a degree. Okay, now show us what your skills are. So I took what I could get, and I was, you know, I did a lot of call center stuff, a lot of telemarketing for timeshares. And the one time I got an amazing job, I worked as a sports and leisure editor, for the Fort Leonard Wood Guidon, a military, you know, base that had their own newspaper. I was a civilian contractor, and I didn't have a journalism degree, but I did write for the college paper. And so they hired me based on that. And I was in heaven, because I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. And then about like 4 or 5 months into it, we had this situation where I the story I was going to do fell through. And so I had this like backup story, which was just, this would have been around 2000. So it was like, hey, have you heard of the internet? And you know, I had all these links to these websites that were kind of fun to look at. And so that published, and the next morning I get to work and I start hearing about, hey, there's something wrong with the story you published. And they're getting all these calls from up and down the chain of command, all the way up to the general who ran Fort Leonard Wood, because one of the stories I linked to, it was a link to celebrity mugshots, but it was a website by Rotten.com, which is super inappropriate. And the military is super like formal and they don't want any obscenity.
Mm-hmm.
And so they fired me. The editor in chief, actually, like, it was this rough and gruff guy. I don't know if he was in the military himself, but at that time he wasn't. And he like cried telling me, because I think he really enjoyed, you know, my company. He like, we had a good time hanging out. So they fired me, and then they managed to like, they invited me back to like interview for my job again. But they went with someone who had experience in the military. But that was like, just, I have so many stories from employment where, you know, most of them I just didn't care about, but this was the one job that I was just heartbroken that I made that mistake, that I didn't check my work enough to, because I could still be in journalism. I could have leveraged that into an actual career in journalism. And there's a lot of stuff like that I've just blamed, you know, most of my life on. I'm just, you know, I just suck. I just suck at this. I can't believe I did it, but it was executive dysfunction. And I wish I had known. Wish I had known at the time.
Do you now look back and do you ever blame ADHD? Like, why? Or you just accept it?
I accept it, but I now look back and go, oh, well, that was executive dysfunction. Okay, that was executive dysfunction. Like, it makes me feel better that it's not a moral failing.
Yeah. It was hard wiring, and that's healthy. Some people would dwell on the fact that, why was I given this so-called gift? And, you know, if I didn't have ADHD, this wouldn't have happened, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound that's the way you think, and that's great.
No, like I said, I'm a pragmatic optimist. Like, I am happy with life. I'm happy with how things have turned out for me, even though I've taken the long and winding road to get to where I am today, which, you know, is not like wildly successful, but it's I'm you know, comfortable, and I'm settled, and I'm happy, and I've got a family, and, you know, things have worked out. And so my optimism, I feel like, has been warranted. So I don't feel like I need to go back and, you know, relitigate everything and,
sure,
and feel like, oh, if only I had, you know, been able to, you know, not have ADD. Like, I don't think I would trade away my ADD at all. I just wish that I had known so that I could have anticipated.
Right. You could handle it. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's, I've got, you know, three kids. My son is off the charts amazing. He's 19. He's in his second year at the Air Force Academy. Doesn't need anything at all. He's amazing. My two daughters both present two different, like, very different aspects of ADD. They haven't been diagnosed yet, but we talk about it a lot, and we talk about, you know, the challenges, and we talk about the gifts, and mm-hmm. we talk about it as a holistic experience, as a holistic, you know, part of who we are, and not simply a blessing and a curse. And I think that's going to help them. That's going to give them the tools they need to succeed where I struggled.
Well, that's good to hear, Shannon, because you are helping your kids understand ADHD because you lived it. They're learning from your experiences, and that's powerful stuff. That said, we've come to the end of the interview, and I just want to thank you, give you a round of applause for talking with us, sharing your story. I know you're helping people, and people can relate, including me.
All right, thank you. Have a good one.
And once again, a special thank you going out to Shannon Russell for taking the time to share with us his story and just a turning point in his ADHD journey, a turning point that resulted in him getting more information. And that's something that we all should be doing. You know, we shouldn't be hyper-focused on it, but it would be nice to know some information about our own ADHD. I say that because with knowledge comes power, power to be able to devise a strategy to work with or around our ADHD if we understand what it's all about. Again, I urge you not to get too hyper-focused on your ADHD because that can too engulf you. You know, we can be so focused on that and everything else is, Everything else is just, you know, noise. You know how we can hyperfocus. And sometimes always bringing up ADHD, especially to family members, that can be a bit tiring. We have it. Let's accept it. Just don't go and keep talking about it and talking about it and talking about it to maybe your family members, especially the people close to you. They know you have it. And it's probably not healthy for us to be doing that all the time anyway. That's not to say that we can't go out and educate people. No, I'm not saying that. It's just not to get too engulfed in the whole ADHD thing. It's like, you know, you don't look at your arm and you say, hey, I've got this arm and I'm going to talk about it forever. No, it's part of us, right? If it hurts, we'll talk about it. But, you know, you can't go on forever. I seem like I'm going on forever here now, so I'm going to wrap things up here. Club ADHD is a presentation of the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, otherwise known as CADAC. Visit their website for more information and lots of stuff about ADHD. That's CADDAC.ca. You're experiencing the podcast. We have a couple of other things to offer you. The Facebook page and the Twitter account. Please sign up. And please urge other people with ADHD to sign up. That's why we're here. For us, adults with ADHD. And just for the fun of it, maybe you can get somebody who doesn't have ADHD to listen in. So maybe they can learn more about it as well, right? The more society learns about ADHD and understands it, the better we'll all be. And I say all, not only just us, society in general, because we have a lot to offer. And please don't forget that. If you're maybe stuck in the emotional mud of life, boy, where did that come from? Or maybe you're down on the weather, I don't know. Just remember, you have something to offer. You are worth something. It's not going to be bad forever. And especially if you take the bull by the horns. Boy, I'm full of cliches these days. If you, you know, take it in your own hands and do something, you know, get yourself up and out there or find something. And if you need to have something to distract you a little bit from your everyday life, go and work out maybe. That might be a good thing to do. I do that. It's just a way of coping. And then evolving, and maybe even flourishing. Yeah, you deserve to flourish. Don't let anybody say anything different. And with that, I'm going to wrap up this edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. I'd like to thank our friends at CADAC, as well as our resident coach, our ADHD coach, Jason Froetz. He'll be back during the next podcast for another edition of TNT, Tips and Tricks. As for me, I'm your cordial and ADHD host, Russ LeBlanc, wishing you a great day. And please, whenever, wherever you can, say it loud, say it proud, ADHD is real. Bye for now.